This is HPR episode 2178 entitled Dice Mixer. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 26 minutes long. The summary is Klaatu reviews the Dice Mixer Dice Tower.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. This is Klaatu. Today I want to talk about something called the Dice Mixer. When I first started playing tabletop games in earnest, I didn't play that many games that required dice. Eventually, I started to gravitate closer and closer to the RPG and RPG-style mechanic games, and they generally do call for dice. And I think when you start to cross that bridge in your analog gaming journey, you find out pretty quickly that dice don't exactly like to stay on tables. And the more dice you start using, like if you come across a game that's like, you know, roll four die or six die or, you know, whatever, depending on what you're playing. Shadowrun, roll 20 die. Not 20-sided die, 20 die. It just gets worse and worse. You know, you roll dice and they just go flying everywhere, right off the table, under the chairs, behind the plants, into the cat's food dish, everywhere but the table. The obvious solution to this, I would say, is kind of the Yahtzee solution. You know how Yahtzee, I guess it used to or still does, I think it was Yahtzee, it came in, like the dice was in a container or something. That always used to fascinate me as a kid. Like, why does Yahtzee come with the dice in a container already? You can't touch the dice. Like, you have to roll it inside this container. I think it was Yahtzee. Anyway. Point being, you put dice in a coffee mug I thought maybe a bowl at one point, but they're slippery and too shallow, so no bowls. But you put it in like a cup or a Tupperware container or something, shake it, and you look at the results. And that does work, unless you've got a lot of dice, in which case it tends to sort of not fall very gracefully. You need a bigger and bigger container. Which becomes awkward. And either way, honestly, it does tend to make other players a little bit suspicious. You know, it introduces that new sort of feeling, just kind of like this sort of discomfort, you know, kind of like, well, we all want to see the dice. Like, let's see what you rolled. You know, it's like, we don't not trust you, but can we see the dice? You know, and it's kind of like everyone's sort of craning their heads over and trying to look into the dice catcher. So it kind of introduces awkwardness, I guess, is what it does. Now, alternately, I guess you could put the dice in a plastic cup, for instance, and then shake that, and you know, turn the cup over and slam it on the table, so that you're kind of containing the dice until they come to a full stop and a rest, and then lift the cup and then look at the die. And that does work. But again, with the more complex games, you sometimes might have like playing pieces or tokens or whatever on the table, drinks for that matter, and slamming something down on the table in a rigorous attempt to you know, shake your die and get them onto the table, it's not necessarily the best way to go. So that's not it. It works, but it's less than practical. So there are these things called a dice tower, and that is not, as I came to learn, a tower made of dice. It's a tower into which you drop your dice. The tower's internals sort of are consist of kind of downward tilting, you know, gravity encouraging sort of stair steps or platforms, but they tilt downward so that the dice is definitely going to, you know, kind of go through the tower, hitting each platform, and then at the end, the dice hit the bottom, usually a tray at the bottom of the tower, and they come to rest there. And it's quite simple and a sort of an elegant solution to one of those problems that most people don't even realize is a problem until it starts to nag them on every game night, you know, that they're playing dice on. So when I first heard of the idea of dice towers, I could see its practicality. The first time I saw a dice tower was like shortly after getting to New Zealand, really. So like 2.5 years ago, maybe. Let's say 2 years ago. I was volunteering at a makerspace in the city in Wellington, and one of the workers there, one of the full-time workers of the place that kind of kept it running, really, actually the only guy I think who actually did any work there, used to construct these little dice towers. He would laser cut them out, you know, and kind of put them together. And I would always see them kind of sitting around, you know, I mean, which is pretty common in most, I think, maker spaces. I mean, there's scraps and little models that people put together and different iterations, you know. So it was kind of common. And at first I didn't even know what it was, to be honest. I mean, I did have to ask. But he explained to me that it was a dice tower and sort of how it worked. And I kind of looked at it and kind of forgot about it, really. It was interesting, but I wasn't really actively gaming yet at that point. So I kind of assumed it was one of those obligatory accessories that a real gamer had to have, you know, like a badge of honor or certification for a serious tabletop gamer. You know, yes, I am a hardcore tabletop gamer. Look, I have a dice tower, that kind of thing. So he kind of shrugged it off, and I think he actually even offered me one. Like, he was like, do you want one? And I was like, well, no, I don't have any use for a dice tower. I'm kicking myself now. But then I did start gaming, of course, and at first never really occurred to me that a dice tower was a thing that I would ever need. But eventually it all kind of came together in my mind, and I realized that a dice tower is actually a very, very useful invention. I went to the website of a local hobby shop just a couple of weeks ago now to look for not a dice tower, but just kind of looking at some of the multi-sided or polygonal dice that they might offer, because I kind of felt the need for more than just the usual, like, six-sided dice that I got in a in a random box from the thrift store. So I was kind of looking around, again, not for a dice tower, but I was kind of like, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, I could use like maybe a tray or something that I could throw dice into without it going all over the place. I just kind of in the back of my mind. And that's when I saw it right there on gamesandhobbies.co.nz, I think it is. It was the dice tower that my friend at the makerspace, named Wolf, by the way, that's his name, Wolf, used to make and leave sitting around. Turns out all those iterations that I'd witnessed being laser cut and constructed and left around the makerspace were prototypes for a custom designed dice tower by my friend Wolf, which he calls the Dice Mixer. And you can see it actually at dicemixer.com. The Dice Mixer, as you will see if you go to the website, is really, really beautiful. It's laser cut from really thin panels of pine. It's assembled by you. Yes, in addition to being a cool dice tower, it is also a puzzle. I mean, not exactly a puzzle, because instructions are actually provided, but you know, so you're not going to, you wouldn't get the thing and then never be able to put it together. But it does feel like a puzzle. It gives you that kind of satisfaction. You either feel like you're playing with like an advanced level of Lego or solving a puzzle, even though you're looking at instructions. But as you construct it, the really cool thing is, as you're building the thing, you get to marvel, you know, at the sheer complexity of engineering that very clearly went into the design. Looking at the dice mixer in photos, like if you go to the website, it kind of gives you an idea if you really look at it. But believe me, you've got no idea. But it does. I mean, you can kind of look at it and see how complex it is in design. I mean, if you look at it, you see that it's all interlocking parts. So there's no glue. There are no staples, nails, you know, no plastic parts. It's all pine, laser cut pine, and it's all interlocking. How cool is that? Well, I will tell you. The tray that catches the die in the front, that folds up and down, so it can become sort of this self-sufficient entity. At the top of the tower where you drop the dice, there's actually a fold up and where it folds up and slides in this panel, so that you can close the top, really, so that you can just put your dice sort of in the top of the tower, and they won't fall through for storage. And then when you're ready, you can pull that panel out, and now it's a dice tower again. So it's absolutely just brilliantly constructed. When you're putting it together, at times you're just thinking, well, this clearly is not going to work. Like, you know, you're putting this thing together, and you got three different parts, and you're looking at it, and you're just like, there's no way all of these laser cut panels are just going to slide and lock together without any bit of glue and actually stand up on its own. Like, that's not good. And the minute I put dice through it, it's going to fall apart. And I'm telling you, my hand raised on a Bible that's floating in the air, it's true. It absolutely works. It locks together. It's all just interlocking parts, not a drop of glue, nothing. It's all just interlocking panels of wood. Even, I mean, the fact that the tray folds up and down, that's just done again with tabs. It's pretty amazing, frankly. I can't really describe it as well as it should be described, or I can. I mean, I just did. I told you all about it. But I mean, in terms of like the level of satisfaction that you get while you're building this thing is amazing, because I kid you not, while you're building it, you will absolutely not believe that it can work. You're just the whole time. So it's very, very impressive. I don't know if he's an engineer or what, but I sort of fell in love with the thing all over again while I was building it. So I ordered a dice mixer, obviously, because I'm talking about building it, pretty much the same day I found it. Actually, I think technically it was the next day, but that was just because I wasn't going to order the day that I was looking. But I did order the next day, and I contacted my friend Wolf to ask, first of all, why he hadn't explained to me that it was his own design, because I felt stupid now, because I was like, I've seen these in process. I've seen the design process firsthand, and I had no idea what I was witnessing. It was pretty cool. But more importantly, to find out sort of more about it, like, what had I missed? Like, even though I was looking at the design process, like, how does one go about designing an interlocking, self-contained contraption like the dice mixer? Turns out that you kind of start with something really basic and really ugly. And the first dice tower that Wolf made was pretty much, yeah, just plain, I don't know what it's called in the States. In New Zealand, we call it MDF, which is kind of like a sort of a thin particle board. And so he just used MDF and glue and clamps, you know, just kind of hacked something together. in the form of a rough dice tower, and he says it's one of the ugliest things he's ever made. But he still has it because he can't bring himself to throw it out. I think probably because he has pity on it, you know, doesn't want to see it thrown in the bin. But yeah, so that's the starting point, which is always comforting, I think, when you see something that looks sort of too amazing to be sort of made by, I don't know, someone that you just kind of know. How did you do that? And then they reveal, oh yeah, it started out glue and particle board that I spray painted black and is just one of the most horrendous things that I've ever made. It's very comforting to me. But based on that early prototype, of course, he built two more versions from that by hand, just kind of trying to refine it into something, you know, a little bit more elegant. But the handcrafting process obviously takes a long time, and I can only imagine the gluing process must. I mean, I don't really know. I've never been very good at constructing things, like especially with glue, because it's got that setting time. You know, you got to let it dry, and I've never been very good at that part. But he found that was taking a little bit longer than what he wanted. So that was kind of his first go at laser cutting the device. But at that point, he was using like toothpicks for hinges, and he was still kind of assembling it with glue. And certainly there was no lid. Like I said, like the current, like the one that he's got now, like has this cool little sliding hinge lid. And again, there are no moving. I mean, there are moving parts, but there are no, you know, it's all just cut out. So there's this slide out and fold down lid in the current iteration that just obviously didn't exist in the early ones. And certainly none of the nice etching. Again, if you go to the website, you'll see really cool looking sort of, I don't know, are they steampunk? Are they Art Deco? Are they Maori sort of designs along the side? So obviously none of that kind of aesthetic choice happened yet. So once he had started laser cutting, he reckons he's had about 15 design revisions, lots of prototypes. And eventually he got something that he kind of felt was worth selling. And through those 15 revisions and false starts, he was able to phase out the glue entirely. So that just kind of developed as he went, I guess. And I guess at one point, because I remember, he was making some plastic versions of it as well. But ultimately he decided that, and he did sell some of those apparently on Etsy.com. But apparently the plastic, first of all, or it had many problems. It was more expensive to buy, harder to work with, and had about a 30% failure rate, and significantly, obviously, less environment friendly. So he eventually decided that he would just use the pine boards as his raw material, and laser cut the parts. All told, Wolf says that he can identify about 25 separate CAD files that kind of led up to his current iteration. Which, I mean, that's a pretty good amount of revision and iteration. That's, again, it's kind of, when you hear about all that work that goes into something that you admire, it's strangely comforting, because it's just like, okay, this thing didn't just spring out of his head. This took work. It took going back to the drawing board several times. And that 25 CAD files, I mean, that's not really, that's like the surviving family tree. That's ignoring the branches that just led off to dead ends. But it is very cool. The end product is really attractive. It's got a small footprint. It's not a huge thing. You know, it's something that you could definitely have on your gaming table, even if your gaming table is fairly small. Me and my girlfriend usually play tabletop games on this little sort of coffee table thing. And it's longer than it is wide. So it's kind of a funky setup. So not a whole lot of space. Like there's more horizontal space than there is, I guess, vertical looking at down at the table. But yeah, this dice tower sort of just sits off to the edge. And certainly, you know, if you think about when you're throwing dice on a table or whatever, you kind of have to carve out an area anyway, because you don't want to throw it on like a board or a set of cards or something. So you kind of have space allotted for dice anyway. And this tower actually minimizes that, if anything, because now you've got like this finite space required for the dice rolls. And you just drop the dice into the tower. They go down the little stairs and they come out randomized, all in this little nice little tray that everyone can look at. Everyone can see the results. There's no kind of suspicion of like, well, you say you got a six, but I can't see that. So it's all very sort of above board, gets rid of any awkwardness, and keeps everything together, keeps everything consolidated. It is not like super cheap in terms of price. It's certainly not super cheap in terms of construction. As I've said, construction is completely amazing. I'm a huge fan of the construction. Honestly, it's something that you should experience building. It's a lot of fun. And then once you've built it, you can sit there and just admire it all day because you know what's going on inside. But it's kind of nice because it's that weird sort of, it's that place that dice towers kind of like, you could either get a super cheap one made off in China, you know, and it's just like some plastic dice tower that does the job, but it's not exactly something that you can look at and admire. It's just a cheap dice tower. But then there are also obviously dice towers that some very avid sort of gamer and craftsman make, and it's like this, you know, one of a kind, like they make it for themselves. And if you were to ask them, could you make me, you know, this hand carved marble dice tower, you know, they'd be like, yeah, sure. If you pay me, you know, for all the labor and all the materials and a premium to bother to make you a hand made dice tower. I mean, that's ridiculous. So it's one of those, it's like this sort of artisanal custom designed and yet easily reproduced tower from a local artist slash engineer. I don't really know what Wolf calls himself in terms of art versus science, but whatever he is, he made this thing and it's really cool. Now, the dice mixer itself, I know because I worked with its designer, which was cool. And even now it's actually only available in like three local hobby shops in New Zealand. I don't believe that it has made, well, I know that it hasn't made it across to the US yet. I don't believe it's even in Australia, for instance. I think it's literally just New Zealand. But you can actually get one if you want one. The dice mixer is certainly hoping, its aim is to get out into stores out in the world, like the US. And until that happens, he is offering free international shipping to anywhere in the world. So if you want to buy one from dicemixer.com, I didn't buy one from dicemixer.com. I bought it from, like I say, the gamesandhobby.co.nz or something. No, sorry, it wasn't Games and Hobby. It was Seriously Bored. Seriouslyboard.co.nz. Bored as BOARD. I know this because I just so happen to have their business card on my desk as I'm speaking this podcast into a microphone. It's right here. So anyway, yeah, you can get it from places, from dicemixer.com and free international shipping. It's a really slick little package. It's like in a little cardboard box, maybe the size of, let's say, a 3.5 inch hard drive. All the pieces are in there and the little instruction booklet is in there, and you get to spend, it'll probably take you half an hour, maybe 45 minutes if you sort of relish it to put it together. And then you've got this really cool dice tower that you've built, and you've supported a local artist, if you define local as a small island thousands of miles away from where you are. So if you have a recommendation for stores too. Like if you have any friends in the hobby shop business or whatever, and you think Wolf should contact them about stocking the dice mixer, you can contact Wolf through the contact link on dicemixer.com, and I urge you to do that because it really is a at least in my view, this is a very unique item. I as I've said before, I'm still sort of getting into tabletop gaming myself, so I could be delusional. Maybe this isn't as unique as I think it is. But even if it isn't unique, and I know dice towers are not unique, I know they exist. And so even if it's not unique in the sense of, well, it's just another dice tower, it really is really well made. It's a really cool feat of design. And I think it's pretty impressive and it's definitely very useful. So if you're looking for a dice tower or if you think you might find one useful, then I urge you to look at dicemixer.com.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.